Blog Talk Radio.
In the beginning was the beat, and the beat was the rhythm of God, and the rhythm of God is the harmony of humanity, and where there is harmony, there is peace.
Tonight, I want to give you the opening question, and the opening question is a cooperative economic model the only sensible course to take for African Americans and Africans on the continent? Once again, is a cooperative economic model the only sensible course to take for African Americans and Africans on the continent? We will be right back and get started with tonight's program.
In the beginning was the beat, and the beat was the rhythm of God, and the rhythm of God is the harmony of humanity, and where there is harmony, there is peace.
Greetings, family. Once again, we welcome you to tonight's Dare to Win conversation, a sober discussion of the economic and political plight of black people and the global cooperative economic model that provides an exact method of gaining economic and political self-determination. We are building the global machinery for our economic freedom and sovereignty and the methodology to pass it forward to future generations. I'm Brother Thurman, a board member of Us Lifting Us, and joining us this evening is another board member, Brother Kim Beasy. Brother Kim Beasy, greetings.
Greetings, Brother Thurman. Good to be with you tonight.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And so tonight, once again, we're asking the question, Is a cooperative economy the only sensible path forward for black people in the U.S., throughout the diaspora, and on the African continent? To take part in the conversation, call 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. And when you've got questions or comments, press 1, and that will put you in the queue. And you can also go to the website on our to our website, usliftingus.com. That's usliftingus.com. And click on to the Listen by Radio tab. And should you have some questions about Us Lifting Us beyond tonight's call, you can also reach the home office at 404-592-2780. 404-592-2780. And Brother Kimbizi, once again, I'll say it again, is a cooperative economic system the only sensible path forward for black people in the U.S. and the diaspora on the African continent? And why is capitalism immoral, greedy, selfish, and incompatible? Brother Kimbizi, give us some thoughts as we begin this call.
Thank you, Brother Thurman, and good evening, family. Always good to be with the Us Lifting Us family. We've been talking about this for quite a while. So obviously the ULU position is that a cooperative economic model is the only sensible path forward for black folks in the United States, in the diaspora, and on the African continent. And to your question, Brother Thurman, why is capitalism immoral, greedy, selfish, and incompatible? We say, first of all, it's immoral on many levels, but let's just look at two. America is built on a huge lie, several lies, actually. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now, that's the opening statement in the Declaration of Independence. Then when the Constitution that governs the country is finally drafted and ratified, in the very first article of that Constitution and Section 2 of the Constitution, they accept slavery as the economic base of this new society, and then go on to define enslaved Africans as three-fifths of a man. So the country is founded upon a lie. In our view, that is immoral. And not only did it lie about freedom being extended to all men who are supposed to be created equal, we know that they invaded the land and exterminated the native indigenous populations that were here. And then they crossed the Atlantic pond and conquered parts of the African continent and drug us here. And that's how we came to be in America. So there's this fundamental lie at the very core of the country. Secondly, capitalism, as we have said many times on this program, is a system of organized theft. Rahsaan Roland Kirk called it volunteered slavery back in when he made that album. When people go out on a job hunting and they find a job, and let's just say the company offers them $10 an hour, and they agree, they have just enrolled in a wage slavery system. Why do I say that? The money the company pays the worker is created by the worker's labor. Not only did the worker create enough surplus value or profit to pay his own salary of $400 a week, the worker actually created a lot more. But the company owners claim the profits for themselves. But think about it. If there is no work done, no matter how shiny the machinery or how much raw material is stacked up ready to be processed, if there's no one there to turn the tools and shape that raw material into finished product, there's nothing to be sold. Hence, there are no profits. So we have to understand that what's going on is the company owners withhold the full profits that the workers create, and they put this in their pockets. So the workers are paid out of a portion of the wealth that they create, and then the rest of it the owners put in their pockets. So since their labor created the profits, the workers, now let's think about this. If the combined work of all the people working in the factory created the profits in the first place, shouldn't the workers at least have a seat at the table and have a voice in how the profits are distributed? That's not how it works under capitalism. So that's what we say it's immoral. It's based on theft. It's based on lies. Then capitalism is also greedy. By design, it creates surplus value of profits, and very large profits, by the way. But that's not sufficient. Capitalism's mantra is, and has been, and will continue to be, maximum profit at all costs. Those of us that are not involved in the management of these companies don't quite sense how egregious this is. But what is going on is if a company, let's just say a company generates profits of 10% this month or this year, next month the shareholders are looking for more than 10%. They're looking for 11% or 12%. And if they don't get it from that company, they will pull their money out and invest in a company that's paying higher returns. So this is the part of capitalism that is manic, is out of control and unsustainable. The internal logic of capitalism is that it must constantly increase its return to investors. And what happens is that there's only two ways to constantly increase your bottom line. A, you have to sell your existing customers more stuff, or B, you have to expand into new markets. And that's what capitalism does. So just think about it. When you used to go to your favorite food spot, you bought a medium-sized drink that was 16 ounces. They gave you an option of a 12-ounce, a 16-ounce, and maybe a 20-ounce beverage. But now you go, and instead of that 16-ounce beverage, it has been replaced with a super large 32-ounce quart container. Again, extracting more profit by getting its existing customer base to spend more money in the store. The other thing it has to do is penetrate new markets. That means you if you're operating in New York, you expand out to Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and other cities. Other states, you go completely across the country. When you've blanketed the country, then you go overseas. And oftentimes when you go to other countries, you have to subvert their politics and customs so you can sell your products. As American fast food chains penetrated deeper and deeper into the Asian markets back in the 70s and 80s, a funny thing began to happen. In countries where cancer and diabetes had never been heard of, all of a sudden, the population is starting to have the same illnesses as Americans and getting fatter like Americans. Meanwhile, the company's bottom line is getting bigger and bigger. This is the greed that knows no limits. And it gets really bizarre when you think about the fact that in America, the three top richest people, Bezos, Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, they own more money and more profit than the bottom half of the entire country. Now, if that doesn't strike us as being something fundamentally wrong, that's because we've been conditioned to accept as normal a system that is just insatiably greedy. The last thing we want to say is that capitalism is selfish. In capitalist culture, individuals are encouraged to get all they can all they get, and then sit on the can. In other words, hoard everything. If you see someone down and out, shame on them. They must be lazy. They are not willing to work as hard like you. In this world, it's all about me, myself, and mine. I. Stay in your lane. Do you. We call this individualism, and this kind of thinking permeates everything. The individual does not have a sense of community, does not see him or herself as part of an extended family or larger collective, and yet it is in these larger groups that the individual finds identity, meaning, and purpose. So let's just pause there for a minute. Brother Thurman, that may have raised some questions in your mind. You may want to give me some feedback before we talk about the last part of it, as capitalism is incompatible.
Yes, well, I would say that you have provided a lot of information for us to just take in very seriously, and if we've never delved into it, we should, be taking notes, and not only that, to walk away from this call and just have a whole different view of the world, because when you talked about the workers are actually the ones that generate the profits and not having a seat at the table. And as we get to the more details about the cooperative model and what they can provide, it would paint a good picture of where we should be moving our efforts, our thoughts, and our money towards pooling our resources. And it's as the opening question about capitalism, that capitalism is immoral, greedy, selfish, and incompatible. We need to really focus on those words: incompatible, immoral, greedy, selfish. Do brutal things to our people, our ancestors, and they have never stopped it. And family go ahead, Brother Kimbeza.
No, go ahead, Brother Thurman. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, I just want to say to the family and the listening audience, make sure you're taking notes, but also we invite you to be a part of the conversation, and you can call in at 929-477-2789, 929-477-2789, and press 1 when you've got a good question, a good comment. So continue on, Brother Kimbeza.
Okay, capitalism is incompatible. And what we are saying here is that capitalism is incompatible with life itself. Interesting, there's a researcher by the name of Dr. T. Colin Campbell who authored a book called The China Study in 2005. It was the largest study on cancer ever done in the world. He surveyed over 800,000 people in China. 6,000 of them actually gave blood and personal medical histories. And the study revealed a direct correlation between eating animal protein and an increase in cancer and diabetes and other chronic diseases. Let me say that again. The result of that study revealed that in China, which had not known cancer on a wide scale, it was just little cases, maybe one or two over there, in a population of over a billion people, and in the span of 25 years, cancer began to break out in most of the major cities that had allowed fast food chains to come into their cities. So rather than explore the implications of this study for ways to improve our health, the American Medical Association continues to search for the magic pill that will cure cancer. because this is a billion-dollar research industry, and at the same time, they're opening thousands of cancer centers across the country that offer surgery and chemotherapy and radiation, even though statistically these don't work. So heart disease, cancer, diabetes continue to be the leading causes of death in this country. And get this, when all three could either be reversed or cured. This is what we mean when we say capitalism is incompatible with life. So let me just pause there, Brother Thurman, see if we have any questions. And then we're going to talk about, we'll double back to our question, why is the cooperative model the only sensible path forward for black people in this country and on the continent and throughout the diaspora?
All right. Currently, we don't have any callers, but anyone got a question? We welcome you, invite you to call in at 929-477-2789, 929-477-2789, and press 1 when you've got a question or comment. And Brother Kimbizi, everything that you've just said, including the last pieces about the cancer, there's always been cures for cancer. You know, some people that's involved in the natural health field have said that there's over 300 cures for cancer, and quite a few of them could be named. And so the people that have, when you talked about that magic pill and the $1 billion that's in the research industry, our people really need to be paying attention, because we've got to opt out of all of this destructive stuff, including the cancer, including the economics and all of the money that we are putting into the communities around the world of non-African people, so that they can dominate the world economically and with the power that it brings. And we've got to step away from that. And I would say that based on just your last piece about the cancer, if I was a meat eater, I would be taking notes, and I would, at the minimum, begin my transition away from being a meat eater, and I would complete that journey, because a whole lot of the problems that people are having when they take away what's causing the cause, a number of the issues, like the medical issues, go away. I'm reminded of Dick Gregory in the 60s when he was a comedian in the country club. He had weighed up to 300 pounds and smoked 4 packs of cigarettes and drank a fifth of liquor every day. But when he went on a fast, based on his involvement in the civil rights as well as the unjust Vietnam War, he went from 300 pounds to 125 pounds, but all of his health issues that he had went away. And that made his mind say, what is it about me not eating? And so it's a wake-up call, and we've got to take note and act, or else we are just doomed.
You know, Brother Thurman, your comment reminded me that one of the things that this researcher, T. Colin Campbell, did in the laboratory after looking at the field results, because he was looking at the Chinese people who had been very healthy, no cancer, no diabetes, no heart disease. And when they started coming down with these ailments, so when he went into the laboratory, he was looking specifically at how does the consumption of animal protein cause cancer, the growth of cancerous cells? And what he discovered was that the body really only needs about 2.5, less than 5% protein in your daily calorie intake. So he was manipulating the level of animal protein in laboratory mice. He was using a protein called casein, which is the protein in milk. And when he increased the laboratory mice's intake of this animal protein up to 20%, all of a sudden, the mice begin to develop cancer cells. when he reduced it back down to 5% of casein in their diet, the cancer went away. They stopped producing cancer cells. He said, that's interesting. So then he said, well, let me see what happens if we give plant protein to these lab mice and see what happens. So at 5%, 10%, 15%, and 20% plant protein in the mice's diet, there was still no generation of cancer cells. So, and they noticed that there was this one-to-one correlation. When you increase the animal protein in the diet, you increase the production of cancer cells. When you decrease the amount of animal protein in the diet, you decrease the activity of cancer cell growth. I say that simply to say that most of us, even though this study came out in 2005, have not been made aware of that information. And so we are going to these doctors when we come down with this, you know, the deadly diagnosis, you know, the C word, and the doctors are telling us, oh, this is hereditary, or you had some exposure to something in the environment, and the only way to address this is first we're going to hit you with chemotherapy, which knocks out the body's immune system. You know, then we're going to do surgery and quote unquote cut out the growth. And then lastly, we're going to wrap it all up with radiation. Well, by that time, almost the cure has killed you. You know, you didn't die from the cancer, you died from the cure. But the really pernicious and demonic aspect of this, they know there's a different method. And that was the point that you made earlier, Brother Summer. You said they've known a variety of cures.
Yes.
But because this is such a money-making event for them, they keep the people in ignorance, and then they just feed on them, watching them die. It's really it's hard to imagine that the quote unquote medical community would be that diabolical around people's health.
Yes, and I'd like to add, when you're talking about the protein and you're talking about dairy and you're talking about meat, they have known before the China study and is rarely talked about, that as you had talked about, when you increase that protein from animals, what it does, and when people that consume meat and many of the meat eaters also do the dairy, the body just from the perspective of your bone health, when you overload your body with protein, which means that if you eat meat and dairy, and that all of that massive protein, it causes the body to excrete calcium out of the bones, and it comes out in your urine, and that has a lot to do with the deterioration. And so there's so many things that they have done, and you mentioned Bill Gates and folks like that, but a lot of these billionaires of the world that support the companies that produce what's called Frankenfoods and these monster foods, including Monsanto, Bayer, a lot of those billionaires, you would think that they support those companies publicly, but they don't eat it. They eat a different diet.
Mm-hmm.
They don't feed it to their children.
Right.
Brother, so this is some very good points, and I know you're with me in saying that our people should be taking notes and we should be taking action, because if we don't take action of the knowledge that's available to us, We'll just be sitting back like zombies, and they'll keep on doing that. So we've got a caller that once got a couple of callers now, but the caller with the last four numbers of 3440, please give us your name and what city and state you're calling from, and give us your brief question or comment. All right, 3440. Welcome to the call. Please give us your name and what city and state you're calling from. All right.
Yes, greetings, brother. This is Brother Shabaka from Baltimore, Maryland. Really, really stimulating conversation going on. I know for the past, several weeks, This topic has been very hot, and people have contributed, particularly to the greed aspect of we see in the capitalist mode of operation, and of course its effect on us. But let me ask you this, because I, you know, like cigarettes, we know that the some properties of cigarettes is responsible for addictive behavior. And I believe, I can't remember right now, just skipped my mind about some of the addictive properties in some of the foods that we eat, particularly of those that are animal proteins, particularly some of the ingredients in the animal protein. In your opinion, since a large number of people eat that fried chicken, maybe even eat chitlins, as that goes, what do you see as some of the things that can be used to wean? You know, we know it's difficult to do a cold turkey, but what are some of the things that you would prescribe to help us to wean, and particularly the weaning to make us a little bit more productive in our thinking, move towards something that is not sustaining what you see the capitalistic economy, but something that is more cooperative, which will be much beneficial for a large number of people. I'll hold on and listen to your answer.
Brother Shabaka, it's good to hear your voice, and I think you raise an important question, and thank you for the question. Over the years of people, various groups and organizations trying to get the information out about the need to shift from an animal protein diet to a plant-based diet, a number of people have begun to do just that. And the easiest, well, I won't say the easiest way, but one approach has been to gradually increase their intake of vegetables and fruit and seeds and nuts, and to begin to decrease the amount of animal protein in their diet. So that's probably the pathway that many have taken, and it has proven beneficial. There are also, and it's good to know, that now on the market there are many meat substitutes. So you can substitute for eggs, you can substitute for chicken, you can substitute for fish. So there are transition foods, if you will, that help people make the journey from a high animal protein diet to a full plant-based diet, vegetarian and even vegan. And beyond that, some are looking at raw food. But to keep this connected to the economic piece, what this raises in my mind is the opportunity for cooperatives to be formed that are distributing healthy foods. That, you know, so that as our people become more and more aware of the power in a cooperative and running cooperative businesses, one of the first questions that comes to mind is, well, what businesses should we go into? Well, obviously, food, clothing, shelter. Those are the basics of life. So we want to explore how we can operate cooperative businesses that are bringing to our community foods that are healthy. That would be my answer to your question. I hope I'm in the ballpark of what you were looking for, Brother Shabaka. And Brother Thurman, you may want to contribute to that also.
Yes, I would. But in the interest of some other callers, you know, we've got a couple of more callers if you want to go to those callers before I said anything.
Yeah, let's get the callers before we get to the break.
Okay. And so caller with the area code, the last four numbers is telephone, is 7244, 7244. Welcome to the call, and please give us your name and where you're calling from.
Otepu, greetings and peace. Uncle Jatinev, this is your brother Equine, I'm calling from South Carolina. How's everybody doing?
Greetings, brother. Good to hear you.
Yeah, great to hear you guys as well. Wonderful dialogue. My contribution to the conversation is that I, as a vegan going on, 7 years, it has been a hard path. It definitely has, being that, brother just spoke about co-opting. You know, a lot of times it can be very complicated, just one person doing it. It is a lot easier when we all work together and encourage and support these healthier choices. And what I found is a lot of black folk, which, of course I'm African, but a lot of black people look at me weird as, we talk about taking care of your body, eating certain things that are going to be green for you. And when I think about green, of course, like they tell you at the beginning of New Year to eat your collard greens and black-eyed peas to, sustain, a level of productivity. But as we're talking about going green, I think it should be synonymous to the stuff that we're putting into our body and what's actually coming about. Because we think about the healthier choices that we, want to make so we can be here a lot longer, so we can be in our children's lives, so we can be in our grandchildren's lives, and thinking about the economic aspect of that, where is your economics or your ability to actually see economics properly if we don't have or not tied into any agricultural, awareness. It has to be there. I know it was a great thing when I was, gardening organically. It was, I'm from the hood, so these things weren't taught to me. Of course, thinking about, pork chop, chicken, things of that nature, that was natural in my environment. But saying that I took it a step further, not only gardening, but gardening organically, free of pesticides, free of fertilizers, or, the genetically modified fertilizers, things of that nature. It's a very good thing to go out as you're preparing your dinner to your garden to get something to put on your table rather than going to this fast food place. Rather than you spending out or forking over dollars, that's one way to enhance your pocketbook or keep some money into your pocket. And as you take it a step further, you can take your ability to grow things and sell it to some neighbors, or where you can be the neighborhood vegetable fruit man or fruit guy, fruit lady, things of that nature. And my question to you all is, given that we are in the environment that spends over $1 million, multi-millions of dollars, to ensure that we are going to go out there and buy Bill Gates' chicken that is trying to, he's down with the Margaret Sanger crew, I call them, he and Bill Clinton, and, they talking about trying to cut out a portion of population, especially when you talk about black people, because a lot of them share the same sentiment as Barbara Bush did that says, hey, a lot of us are on government assistance, so when we die, when we kill off ourselves, it's in the best interest. So you understand? So my question to you all is, how of an importance is it for us to equip ourselves mentally as far as education? Because nobody's going to do this for us, from what I see, especially not our oppressor, not our enemy that has been capitalizing off our ignorance for so long. How important is it for us to, get into that conversation or that awareness?
Yes, brother. We thank you. You brought forth some vital information. And, Brother Kimbizi, would you like to address his question and what he was talking about?
Okay.
I just say ashe to everything he said.
Yes.
I think, one of the reasons why we do the Dare to Win radio broadcast is to create a platform where we can share information and do some of the educational work. I also applaud the brother in terms of the gardening and growing the food. all of us, well, I won't say all of us, but a great many of us have the opportunity to begin gardening and growing our own food. And as a strategic move, that's something that we need to stress every time we're on the airwaves. Get in the garden, begin to put some seed in the ground and cultivate plants and get to a place where a portion of your evening meal or your daily intake is coming out of your garden. And to his point about you can do that organically without the pesticides and the fertilizers, the chemical fertilizers that are laced with stuff that you don't want in your body anyway. So he's on point. He's definitely on point. And he adds to our understanding when it's people who are just calling in and say, yeah, this is part of my journey. You know, I used to have a high animal protein diet. I got off of that. I'm doing vegan now. Been vegan for 7 years. So it's just proof that this is not something foreign, but more and more people are beginning to come to a higher understanding of what's at stake and the value of making this shift and the economic impact when we then work collectively through our own businesses to offer these products to our people so that A, we're healthier, and B, the money stays inside of our community rather than going out of our community. So I applaud the brother and thank him for his comment.
Yes, beautiful, beautiful. Family members, we're gonna take a short break, and we're going to come back and we're going to focus more of the conversation about is the cooperative model, the Us Lifting Us cooperative model, the sensible choice, and of course it is, and we will delve into that, and we thank you so much for being on the call, and we will be right back with you in a very short, after this short break. Family, we welcome you back to the call, and we want to cover as much as we can in the time that we have left. I am Brother Thurman, and Brother Kambizi is also a board member. He's on the line, and we've talked about the reasons that capitalism can no longer serve the world. So why, in your opinion, is a cooperative model the most sensible path forward for our people? Brother
Kambizi. Again, thank you, Brother Thurman. Let me begin to answer that question by thanking one of our new board members, Sister Gail McGee, who goes by the name of Timing. And she shared that cooperative is the opposite of the negative mentioned capitalism. Cooperative is unselfish, it is giving, sharing, moral, that is the right thing to do, done from our heart to our own. We must, we can. In this brief statement, she captures the fundamental essence why African-descended people must rapidly shift to a cooperative economic model if we plan to exist and thrive on this planet. Since the timing begins with what is most important, that is African values. So before we talk about the currency, before we talk about import-export, before we talk about anything economically, we have to talk about what values does this community of people practice. What is it? How do they want to live together? And so when she lifts up sharing and caring and love and righteousness and truthfulness and justice, it is the absence of these primal values that is destroying American society right before our eyes. I mean, when you have a leadership that traffics in lies, you know that society is doomed. So a cooperative economic model rests on an African value system. We say this many, many times, but we can't overemphasize it. We can't stress it enough. Our starting point in Us Lifting Us is with an African value system. Truth, justice, righteousness, cosmic order, balance, harmony, reciprocity. Brother Paul Grant, who is a ULU member, gave us a brilliant document called Ifowo Sofobo. I'm messing that up. It's a tongue twister. Economics. But what it means is all pulled together. And he said that the first starting principle of our value system is that spirit is the ultimate aspect of reality, not material. Once we grasp the significance and how important that is, because we as African people, we have always understood and acknowledged and valued spirit more than we do diamonds and gold and coltan. So we want to rebuild our society, our communities, our nation, our world around these African values, where spirit is first, where we acknowledge that Mother Earth herself is a living organism, that the land is a gift from the deity given to us to be stewards of, that it cannot be sold. That is a radical idea from an economic standpoint. But it begins to move us in the right direction of how we do commerce together. When we respect life, when we value women, when we acknowledge the presence of our ancestors, when we seek their wisdom and their guidance, and we build an economic model that does that, then we're on the pathway to a sustainable and viable and thriving existence. So the first thing, the first order of business is this African value system. Equally important to a cooperative economic model is that it moves the overwhelming majority of our people and all the people who do the actual work in this economy to the position of owners. I can't stress that enough. Currently, we are in a situation, we are in an economic system that is privately owned by the very people who are our enemies, if you will. And their ability to maintain their wealth and their power on the globe is because they own the means of production. They own the factories. They own the land. They own all of the instruments that produce wealth are in the hands of a few private owners, primarily who are white males. There are a few white females in the mix, but by and large, this is a system that is privately owned and controlled by white males. And it benefits white males and their children. When we talk about a cooperative economic system, we are talking about overturning that model and building a model that is collectively owned, that is group owned, that is owned by the majority of the people. So when you purchase a co-op share in Us Lifting Us, what you are doing is investing in your portion of the means of production. If you get nothing else from what we're talking about tonight, get that. We must own the means of production in order to be free. So for the first time now in the last 500 years or so, in a cooperative economy, we again become owners of the means of production, and that's because each share that is purchased in Us Lifting Us, in this cooperative model, enables us to open businesses that are also cooperative. So the whole set of the whole network of businesses that are operated are all group owned. And everyone that is a member of that group then receives the benefits from that business being profitable. We go from being wage slaves to business owners. And in that one move, we change our entire reality from being beggars and paupers and always being in lack to being the actual drivers of society. And we, in the words of Cabral, we now return to the ability to make our own history rather than to be these sub players and these minor bit parts in someone else's narrative. The global struggle raging in our world today is about freeing the productive forces of the planet. We're moving from the stranglehold of private ownership and wage slavery to group ownership. That is the key. And what we're looking for are people who understand that this is not rocket science. It is not hard to do. It requires imagination and will. But the good news is we don't have to petition anybody. We don't have to march on Washington. We don't have to go before anybody's court and lay out a case. All we have to do is make the decision to pool our dollars and organize and operate other cooperative businesses. As an example, the struggle, we know that Uber and Lyft held a one-day strike today. I think it was today. It was Wednesday. And they were demanding higher wages from Uber and Lyft. That's the trick bag that capitalism puts workers in. We're always begging the owners for a higher wage. The truth of the matter is that if we organize our own Uber and Lyft as a cooperative, then both the drivers and the people who use the service as owners, we pay ourselves. We provide the service of transportation, and we compensate in a living wage or in a living basis those who are driving the vehicles. And with the surplus, we take care of other concerns. It's just a matter of reorganizing how the society is structured. So, Ulu affords us this opportunity to build an alternative economy from the ground up, from the grassroots up. The technology is already here. The only thing missing, as I said before, is imagination and will. And the good news is Black people have a superabundance of both. To me, what is so exciting is we don't have to ask anyone's permission, as I said. All we have to do, as Nike said, just do it. Think about this. You join Ulu, Us Lifting Us, it costs you $50 for your annual membership. As soon as you're able, you purchase a co-op share for $1,000 or multiple shares, some for your children and your grandchildren, so that they also can be independent and free. And with these pooled monies, we open cooperative businesses that are group owned by us. It's a very brilliant concept. It's a very simple concept. Cooperatives are as old as the human family. Africans, long before Europeans came to the continent, were organizing their economics cooperatively. This business of gouging each other to become millionaires and billionaires while the majority of people live in poverty, that's not us. And so think about this. For every 1,000 co-op units purchased, that's $1 million. Now, there are some statistics say there are 1,700,913 black people in Metro Atlanta alone. Do you realize that if each one of them was to purchase a share in Ulu, that would be $1,700,000,000 to work with? So we have the resources. It's they're parked in our wallets and in our pocketbooks. The question is what will it take for us to trust each other enough to pool our money and start opening the businesses that we need in our community? Well, why are we going to beauty salons and not beauty salons, but beauty product stores operated by people who don't look like us, who don't live in our community? Why are we pouring all of our money into those enterprises? We used to own our own beauty supply stores. How did we get away from that? We need to get back to that. Grocery stores. Why are we giving our money to grocery operators who have product on the shelves that hold ingredients that make us sick? Why are we doing that? The brother who called in said he was gardening and said that as more and more people begin to garden, we can have our own garden fruit stands and vegetable stands right in our own neighborhoods, and that's very true. And we're not talking about just small-scale businesses. We're talking about large-scale businesses that are capable of doing commerce in the billions of dollars. With $1.3 trillion flowing through our hands every year, this is not hard for us to imagine, and it's not hard for us to coordinate and organize and execute. And that is the Ulu petition to our people each week when we talk about Dare to Win. Do we have the courage and the faith in ourselves and in our ancestors and in our deities to utilize these overwhelming gifts at our fingertips and show the world what a sane world looks like when led by these African values? I'll pause there, Brother Thurman. I know you need to make a comment.
Yes, Brother, when you're talking about trusting, how many sisters and brothers and where are they located that have trusted us, lifting us, and stuck their neck out? How many
members? Good question. Well, at this point, we're about 500 strong.
Okay, so 500 plus sisters and brothers have stuck their neck out and joined. So there's people that that believe in our need to take control of our economics so that we will not forever be at the mercy of others. They have done that. And are they limited to the U.S.?
No, they're all over the globe. They're on the African continent. They're in the Caribbean, Bermuda. They're in Europe. They're in Ireland. They're in England, and of course they're all over the continent of Africa.
Okay.
They're in Canada. So we have members across the country, around the world. And it's just more and more people hearing this message, hearing this information, and having a hard conversation with themselves and asking themselves, what am I waiting for?
Yes, brother.
It's clear, you know, the country's unraveling. And we have this wonderful opportunity to seize the moment and do for self.
Okay. Before we get off the call, callers, everybody on the line, we thank you for being with us this evening, and we're here every Thursday, and we can go further into the conversation and including the thing about gardening and the health and things like that. We just have to do another show to focus in the first half an hour strictly on that. And if you had some questions that you did not call in, we've got one more caller we want to get to before we close out the 0673, just hold on. But if you have any questions or comments that you did not fulfill tonight, you can email us at info@usliftingus.com, info@usliftingus.com, and you can also call the home office at 404-592-2780. That's 404-592-2780. And also make sure you go to the Us Lifting Us website, and you would also be able to leave your questions or inquiries on the website, usliftingus.com. And Brother Kimbizi, before we go to this caller, would you like to say something about the upcoming Malcolm X festival?
Thank you. Brothers and sisters, mark your calendars May 18th and 19th, the Malcolm X Grassroots Festival, an annual festival in Atlanta, will be in the West End Park again this year, May the 18th and 19th. And we'll be there along with thousands of our people. We look to see you there. So come on out, have a good time, be in the midst with our folk, enjoy the culture, and let's do commerce together.
And also, family members, Us Lifting Us has a page, a Facebook page, and you can look on the Facebook page in the next couple of days. The information about the festival will also be there. And before we end the call, we do want to reach out to our caller that's been waiting for a while. That's the last four numbers is 0673. Please give us your name and tell us where you're calling from.
Hello, Brother Kevlon from Midlothian, Virginia.
Greetings, brother. Thank
can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
All right, I'm gonna be brief. Yeah, I like that. I'm gonna frame that statement. Capitalism isn't compatible to life itself. And
yes.
Capitalism says that the first law of nature is self-preservation that we were taught as a youth. But first law of nature is group preservation. See, capitalism is about preserving the individual, what's best for the individual, and not what's best for the group. And I will end with this statement that I got off the website. This young lady is talking to her father and said, "Daddy, why isn't there a cure for cancer?" And her father's response is, "Because, Alyssa, there's far more money to be made treating a disease for a lifetime rather than curing it in a day." And that goes back to what you said, capitalism is incompatible to life itself. It's about making profit at the expense of others.
So right, brother.
So true, brother. So true.
Yes. All right, brother.
Now enjoy the program.
Yeah, thank you, brother.
Thank you, brother. We appreciate the call and the comment and the spirit of the comment.
Absolutely.
All right, brother.
All right, Brother Kimbizi, you got any other closing words before we end tonight? We'll be back here again next week, and each week we have some current event kind of topics, as well as bringing more information and more clarity about Us Lifting Us. It's a working model in place. It's not something that we're talking about. It's in place. So, Brother Kimbizi, have you got some closing words you want to give?
Just let's dare to win, people. Let's dare to win and dare to win collectively as the group and the powerful people that we have always been and we continue to be. Thank you, Brother Thurman. Great job. We'll be back next Thursday.
Wait. We'll be right back.
together. We're polishing up our act now. And if you've ever been held down before, I know you refuse to be held down. Trying to make it, they only push you aside. They really don't have nowhere to go. Ask them where they're going. Bye.